This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 667, brought to you by Eero. Never think about Wi-Fi again. Get $100 off the Eero base unit and two beacons package and 1 year of Eero Plus. Visit Eero.com/iFanboy and at checkout, enter iFanboy. And iFanboy listeners just like you. Let me take you to the hurting ground. Episode 667. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and Josh is back.
I am. Oops, I'm
sort of back.
I'm partially back.
You left part of you on the coast.
No, that's not true. My kids had something for me when I returned.
Oh, I see.
That's how this works.
Well, we are iFanboy, and every week we read our comics, even if we're sick, and one of us picks their favorite book. We call it the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book, some other books from the week, the patron picks, and powers. If we have time for some listener mail, it'll be fun. Even if we are coughing, even if it hurts to talk.
We will try not to cough in the ears of the listeners.
That would be appreciated.
That's our promise to you. We will try not to cough in your ears. We learned a long time ago not to eat cookies in your ears, for example.
They were good cookies, though. Here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There'll be some spoilers, so some caution this week. Josh.
Well, the thing is this. I put out a podcast this week. With an interview with myself and Brian Edward Hill, which I also noticed when you say Brian Edward Hill, it sort of vaguely reminds you of Brian Michael Bendis because it's three names. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I see. Two first names and then a last name. That makes me like a comic book writer, I think. at least it gives him a heads up. Then I read through all my books this week, and I didn't have like an immediate standout. Mm-hmm. But what I did realize is that American Carnage, which you made Pick of the Week, the first issue, yeah, and I was not on that show, has really become, and I say this about a lot of Hill's books, is that it has really become a, like, I see it and I'm like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting, modern, relevant, and well-done comic book that you know, it's the Vertigo line. I think it's the only one of two Vertigo books that they sort of relaunched that I was interested in continuing with, and I'm very interested in continuing.
Well, when they announced that whole line, we went through it in the show, and this was the only one. I mean, the rest were all like horror, you know, fantasy books,
and a limply veiled social message book. And this is a social message book in its way, but without being like,
well, it's hard. It's a crime book.
I mean, yeah, exactly. With relevant content.
Sugar.
Yep, yeah. Exactly. I really liked talking to him about it when we spoke about the book. But also, I just dug it. I read that first issue and I was like, oh yeah, that was totally Pick of the Week. I read the second one and I was like, you get to the one where you get to the end. You're like, I really want to read the next one. And that's what was happening with me here. And I am in the middle of it, and I was like, this art's great. Who's all right? It's Leandro Fernandez. And he did, you know, what was the last thing that he did? It was the Pete Milligan book.
I thought it was the Greg Rucka book that we, the Old Guard.
That's right. That's right. I guess that's not coming back.
That book that just disappeared. After.
Yes, it did.
It was like two of the six issues were Pick of the Week, or three of the six issues were Pick of the Week, and then it just disappeared.
Oh, jeez. Greg Rucka's, yeah. But you know, like I've always liked that guy. I liked him. He was on Queen and Country, and that was sort of controversial because he drew a little unrealistically. But he's really good now. Like he's gotten better, and his style smoothed out a little. Not that I really needed that.
It's not as exaggerated, but it's still very clearly him.
I think that also, Hill is a fairly straightforward writer, and Fernandez is a little more abstract. Not a lot, but they pull against each other in an interesting way.
Mm-hmm.
I think, if that makes sense. Like, there's a looseness to the art where there's a tightness to the script, and I think that it makes a really nice blend for that reason. And you know, there's a great gray ambiguity about this book. Basically, you've got a cop who is ostensibly black, but is very, very, very light skinned, so he can pass for white. And he infiltrates a white supremacist group, and he's forming relationships with various people involved, including the leader of the group, who is the father of a woman, who he's got another kind of weird relationship with, and everything is unclear. And not unclearly written. It's just like he doesn't know where anybody really stands, and so we're left sort of wondering where everybody stands. It's violent. It's I was gonna say gritty, but that word doesn't mean anything. It's shocking enough that, you know, like our sensibilities aren't completely like ignored by it. You know, like there's enough going on. They're like, oh wow, that's sort of
yeah.
Extreme.
I'm trying to think. I mean, this is clearly. And it's a cliche at this point. This is a Vertigo book, right? So
yeah.
This feels like a Vertigo book. I'm glad this wasn't an Image book for no other reason than I want Vertigo to have these kind of books come out.
Mm-hmm.
And I ultimately don't really care who publishes it. And I don't want – it's not like a spiritual successor to Scalped.
No, but it
– But it feels – it's sort of that – it lives in that same moral ambiguity.
It lives in that world. It lives in the Brian Azzarello sort of 100 Bullets world.
Yeah, I think if you took 100 Bullets and Scalped and sort of put them in a blender –
Yeah,
and sort of cut it with something else, you would get this book, because it, you know, it's an undercover guy like Scalped. It's the Leandro Fernandez art feels very much like Eduardo Risso in many ways, and
yep.
It's terribly good, and I mean that terribly because it's very good, but also what's happening is terrible. So it's very, very good. It's very quickly become one of my favorite books coming out.
Yeah, and I just. You know, if you should listen to that, not you, but the collective, you should listen to that interview I had with Hill. We talked about this book a lot. We talked about sort of the social issues that are involved with it, and sort of where the writer is able to be coming from. I mean, basically, my preview is that I was reading. I go, well, I as a white person would have a hard time getting away with writing this, and he saw that he saw that comment in a completely different way than I had intended it. And so we had two different conversations about it, which I really enjoyed. But I don't know what to make of this book in the best way. Like, is the girl bad or good? I don't think we're going to get like an answer on that. Like, it's sort of people struggling.
I think they're shades, right? So, you know, hardly anyone is all good. Hardly anyone's all bad.
Yeah.
And
I think that's the point.
And what's great about this issue is you learn a bit more about the main. What is the main character's name?
I'm just going to call all main characters who I don't know Rick.
We learned about Rick's background.
Actually, it's Richard.
Is it?
Yeah.
His last name was Wright, so Richard Wright, I guess.
Richard Wright, famous African-American author.
We learn about his background a little more. We see him as he enters undercover work. We also get some flashes to some of his – very quickly to some of his past jobs, his past missions, I guess, while shit goes really wrong for him in the present. I mean, really wrong.
Yeah.
So – it's structured really well, and then like as the shit goes wrong, and then the guy in the really racist Obama mask shows up as sort of a cleaner, and it gets even worse for him. It's just you're just reading it, you're just like, oh god, and then you know,
yes,
then there's a really fun final scene where you know, clearly there's more going on here than meets the eye, because the ending scene is completely baffling in a terrific way. You're just like, what does that mean? And that's a great cliffhanger. Yeah.
And I think that one of the ways that you can also connect it to Scalp is that shades of gray, that moral ambiguity, that kind of thing. Like, what Scalp did, and what convinced me that Jason Aaron was a fantastic writer for the first time, and which he is very, you know, rarely disavowed me of, is that he'd have these characters who were ostensibly evil. On paper, you look at it, supposed to be the bad guy, but he'd go, here's the humanity about them at the same time. So when you have a character like Red Crow, you couldn't hate him fully because he's a human, and it's important to remember, like, people who do bad things are still humans. And I think that's going on here a lot.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced Al Swearengen's a bad guy. See?
I was not surprised that this was the pick, because this was one of my favorite books this week. And I'm really happy when it comes out. I'm happy it's not like a double ship book and they don't rush it out and change the artists. And I'm happy.
It does feel like a little bit of like, this is how it used to be. It's great.
Yeah. And the Fernandez art is really terrific. He's one of those guys like Riso who does really well with a lot of dark. A lot of dark in the panel, a lot of silhouettes. The scene where the daughter wakes up after he calls her because shit's gone wrong. And she, you know, no matter what, she's all in silhouette the entire time, which is clearly a choice. She looks, I mean, it makes her look black. And so what does that mean? Mm-hmm. You know, so.
And it's just that little twist of like a European artist coming at it with a European sensibility. That gunfight was great. You know, also, you got to give credit to Dean White for the colors. The colors are wonderful.
Yeah, he's great.
Yep.
This is a great book. Yeah. And we were excited when he announced it. It paid off at the first issue, and second issue was great. Third issue was perfect of the week. So I have a feeling we're going to be talking about this book a lot going forward.
Yep.
Until we stop talking about it, because it becomes one of those books.
But what's nice, though, is because it is an image, it will probably finish.
Maybe. Who knows these days?
Saying.
So the other big book this week was, well, there's a couple of big books this week, but probably the big prestige release was Naomi, which is the second book from the Wonder Comics line. Ryan Michael Bendis's little YA or all ages or whatever you want to call it imprint at DC. This one is co-written by David F. Walker, drawn by Jamal Campbell. And I had no idea, and I learned about this after reading the issue, that like Bendis and Walker are like best friends.
I think that I had hints of it, and then like I forget and then kind of remember, but yeah.
Like they met in Portland and they both co-teach a class.
Right, that's what I mean. There,
like, and they have dinner every Friday night. Like it's like I was like, you know, oh.
So what happened with him in Fraction then?
Fraction sitting at home going, why am I not co-writing a book? He's not.
But you've had your chance, Fraction.
So this is about a young girl in a small town in the Pacific Northwest who is...
the problem with everyone moving to Portland is that all of a sudden the books are all about fucking Portland.
Well, this is not Portland, but this is clearly a small town.
Whatever.
Outside of Portland.
It's Portland-esque.
There's a lot of hipsters in the
district. Fred Armisen's in the background, pal.
So Superman is fighting Mongul, and, you know, in the course of one of those, like miles... spanning fights, they bounce into the small town. They have a couple of punches on the main street, and they fly away again. And that sort of becomes the most exciting thing that ever happened to the town. And for a girl like Naomi, who is a Superman fan, it's really great. And then he comes back briefly to help clean up, and she misses him again. But slowly it unravels that there is a mystery here. Something else had happened in the past. This wasn't the first time superheroes showed up in town, but no one will talk about it. And then it was revealed that the last time they came to town was the day she was born, mm-hmm. or the day she was adopted. So, she's going to be a superhero. But I liked it. I liked it a lot.
I saw it, and I didn't see it. I saw that you put it on the list, and I went, oh, I should probably read that, and then I didn't get to it. So,
It was really good. Okay. It's interesting because Bendis and Walker are very different writers, and it's not really either one of them here.
Really?
You know, there's some things that are Bendis-y, but it's not, you know, there's definitely like that pitter-patter dialogue, but it's not fully Bendis and it's not fully Walker. And you have a
and that's good.
Female, a black female. Yes, it's good. And you have a black female protagonist. So Walker, as we said before, lends a lot of authenticity to those characters, and so it feels really right. And
Bendis has a lot of experience doing black female protagonists too. So, I mean, literally going back to like Powers at some point. I mean, I think it's when he started adopting his kids. He wanted to put representation in the books for them. Yep. And that's this is not a criticism. It's just it is.
It was very good. This was very good. I don't know if it had been my pick. I didn't really think about what my pick would have been this week, but it was a very good issue. And it's a good start between this and Young Justice for this line of books. It's very different. It feels like, you know, it's a very classic Superman. You know, they said these are all in continuity. It doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. And it's good. It's very good. I mean, we've talked about Walker a lot. He's a really good writer. So
yeah, I'm digging his Image series.
Two really good writers in the
Bitterroot.
Book. Bitterroot, yeah. Plus Jamal Campbell is a really, really strong artist. It's a different style than you're used to in a lot of DC books. So it's a really strong debut.
Nice.
Yeah.
So while we were on the break, I read two issues of Cover because I was catching up. And I thought, I'm really upset that there's not a show that we can talk about how weird this book is.
Yeah,
it's like the and we're gonna this is we just talked about Bendis, but now we're gonna talk about a completely different Bendis.
Yeah.
So just so I'm clear, the main character in this book is more or less David Mack.
Yes.
Who did a martial arts story, Kabuki, and then didn't really have another hit after that, but can work and is respected generally, but...
Does a lot of cover work.
Yeah, does. Goes to cons, can sell sketches, do everything. Yeah. He is recruited by a government operative of some way, not CIA or whatever, they don't really say, to be a spy of sorts. He's not necessarily doing wet work, although there's been a little bit of that. And then he is supposed to go after Esad Ribic. It's him. I mean,
well,
it's him.
Is it Esad Ribic or is it the other guy, Igor Cordy?
No, it's Esad Ribic. Like it looks like him. Esad Ribic is a mountain of a man. It's him. That's the drawing. Who he goes to? This is what has happened in the past. And the reason I'm explaining of it because it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you read it. I want to say it all out loud because I want to hear Connor laugh. And so he goes to fight Ribic a couple of issues ago. He's captured and then put in a chair and Ribic sort of tortures him. And then David Mack, these aren't the characters' names, but may as well be, gets out of it by saying, you love Jack Kirby and this is not what Jack Kirby would have done.
Yeah.
Which ends that scenario. So
Jack Kirby would have been punching you in this room.
Jack Kirby was the Nazi puncher. And it worked. And then in this one, he gets invited to another con because that's sort of how this happens. And he finds out the entire con was put up for the benefit of having him go out there. And all these other artists, including Bendis, are paid to go out to this con in, I think it's Brazil.
Well, Bendis has been this sort of sidekick character. Yeah. This whole time. Also, I don't know who the other people at the table at the beginning of this issue are, but clearly those are other people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But just the fact that he's not the villain. Could have
been David Walker, for all we know.
Yeah, yeah. The villain is Esad Ribic for a little while, which is like, all right, go on. I'm listening.
It's a weird book.
It's a weird book. And also, like, it's funny because I put David Mack on a certain level, a certain pedestal might not be the right word, but I just think, oh, he's a guy who doesn't. This doesn't seem like a book that David Mack would be doing. And again, not a criticism. It's just just all weird.
I think Ryan and I talked about it before, but I mean, it's sort of an artist. I think it's an artistic tour de force for David Mack.
It's good. Like I like it. I don't know if I've made that clear.
He's doing like four different styles in all these issues, and it's terrific. It's like it's totally bizarre, but I really dig it for its bizarreness and for the fact that despite the fact that it has David Mack and Esad Ribic as dueling spies. There's a lot of authenticity here and heart in the portrayal of life as a comic creator on the road at these conventions or hanging out with each other or how they banter while they're doing their work. Like it's almost like there's two different books going on here. One is a sort of really great slice of life look at the life of a comic or comic creators. And then the other one is a strange sort of 80s spy movie, you know?
Right.
Like, yeah, it's totally bizarre. I mean,
weird,
but it's great. It's my It's my favorite of the Bendis Jinx World relaunches.
I think it might be. I think that might be the case. And like every time afterwards, I'm like, I think I really enjoyed that, but I'm not even clear that I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so insidery though.
Yeah.
Oh, like sure. It is like, how can I put the smallest possible readership on this thing in a sort of a mainstream context? And then even within comics, I don't know. Like, I feel like it's not like a lot of people know a lot about David Mack.
Right.
I don't know.
Especially now, like 20 years ago,
it's almost like he did this book just for his circle of friends and he got DC to publish it. And
hey, why not?
I know. It's, you know, for a guy who's really sort of done a lot of broad work for such a long time, it's oddly specific. Like, actually, you know what? What was the, it's kind of the autobiomemoir book he did way back.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Yeah, that he wrote and drew. And it was great.
Yep.
But, you know, he'd always said he'd do a second one of those. This is like in that same sort of vein. It's just super.
Well, exciting. I mean, you got Bessel Bendis and David Bendis.
Fortune and Glory.
Fortune and Glory. Bendis doing most, Mack's doing most of the art, but also Michael Avon Oeming is doing some of the art, too. So yeah. This is basically like, hey, guys, let's do this.
I really like that he has a family like that, you know?
And also, this is the place that he gets to do his weird, really idiosyncratic books. He does Superman. He does, you know, even Young Justice is a big book over in his other line. But this is like his weird shit that he came up doing. That is his Fortune and Glory plus his Jinx and Goldfish stuff. And
yeah,
I like it. He's got range. People might forget that because he writes so many superhero books, but he's got a hell of a lot of range.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my favorite of his Jinx World books, for sure.
Yeah, I'm enjoying a couple of them. Pearl came out this week. I like that book too, just because I still don't know what to make of it. I just like
how
that
does Esad Ribic feel about this?
I don't know. I have to assume he's in on it because you don't want to make him angry. He's 7 feet tall. I want to point this, the character as drawn in the book is not an exaggeration.
Right.
I have been next to him and I was like, good God. Igor Corday is a different kind of dude.
That's right. I looked at the photos while you were talking.
Yeah, he's like special forces scary.
He's a, right. David Mack's character wouldn't have woken up if it was Igor Corday in the room.
No way. Wouldn't have, exactly. It would have been.
No, but that scene in the last issue where he's like, you admire Kirby, but if Kirby's in the room, he'd be punching you, was like, I was like, my mind was blown.
Mm-hmm.
It's like what? In a great way.
Yeah. It's a heck of a series. It's the strangest thing.
So, and I don't know, is it ending in six? I don't know how what these are doing. But
it can't go on forever. Although it doesn't feel like it. It still feels like
he's barely getting started.
Yeah, it still feels like we're in the opening act, so I doubt it's six.
Guardians of the Galaxy number one, I was very excited for. Donny Cates on story, Jeff Shaw on art, who is his collaborator. He did Cosmic Ghost Rider and his image book. And
no, he wasn't in Cosmic Ghost Rider. He was on Thanos.
He did the covers for Cosmic Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
I meant Thanos. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
I think God Country with
the image book. I didn't like it.
Didn't like it at all.
I mean, it was okay. I guess I felt like it was missing that Donny Cates special sauce. And if you had taken the name off of this book, I don't think I could have told you who wrote it. You know, we've been talking about how he has that strange sort of needle eye, you know, he goes through the eye of the needle with his sort of goofy but also serious tone, and I just felt like it was missing here. And also, like, there was some, I mean, it's not his fault, but some things, like, I didn't know what happened to Groot. Like, I didn't know why suddenly he talks normal.
Yeah.
You know, and
also, I never want that, by the way.
Yeah, we've talked about that before, but there was just things, like, I didn't really explain. I don't think there was a recap page, so I didn't know why. Like, so, but it was fine. You roll with it. But
that doesn't bother me so much. Actually, I kind of like that in a way. Like, oh, it's just because that always reminds me of like when I would read Avengers comics as a kid,
right.
And I was just like, I guess I'll just get on this, which is fine. I think there was a lot of work to be done here, in terms of setup, in terms of starting the story, and maybe that didn't leave enough room for the fun bit.
True. I mean, there's a lot of heavy lifting, and I'm not saying I'm not going to continue reading it. I'm definitely going to continue reading it. expecting it. I just was like, I was really excited for it based on, you know, the last five books he's written. And I was like, oh, all right.
I think that I was probably less excited about it. I don't actually really like Venom all that much. I didn't keep reading it, so.
I didn't read it at all, clearly.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't expect to like everything that he does. I liked this. I didn't love it. I liked that. I mean, I think one of the things is that Kate seems to be in a spot now where he's kind of allowed to do what he wants. Mm-hmm. He earned the freedom of, I'm going to get to throw all this stuff in a pot and see what it does. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily always work out, but also we don't really see how it's going to go. I liked how the beginning went. Like, every time Star Fox shows up, I'm like, he's just a weird character, and they kind of do something different with him.
I just wish he was in his classic costume. The classic costume really fit the character.
It's true, but this is like a different version of him.
Yeah, I get it.
And the way that he came about it, I was like, this is weird. And the way that they formed whatever this little team was. And even, you know, it's funny because this isn't Peter Quill. This isn't, what's his name from the movies? It's not that version. It doesn't feel like it, which I'm fine with. Yeah. And like, is Moondragon not human? I thought she was.
I don't know. The good thing is I don't know a lot about some of these characters. So
yeah, and I think that's fun. And I know in the background, I'm like, hey, there's Quasar. There's Super Skrull. I like that it's deep Marvel. You know, you've got Centurion in there. You've got all these different characters. And I don't know. It is a little crazy. I think it needs to come together.
Yeah, and I'm giving it rope because he has proved himself over and over.
No one, though, has done Guardians of the Galaxy with any sort of stickiness since Abnett and Landing. And I think I'm waiting for that bar to be cleared, and I don't know that it will be.
Yeah, I mean, G. Gerry, Duggan, the books Bendis are good, but it just doesn't set the world on fire.
I also think it's really interesting that, I mean, at this point, there's 20, what, two Marvel movies, more than that?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of hewing really closely to the movie version of stuff probably isn't as important as possible, but this is completely turning the property on its head if they had people coming to get this comic book because they liked the movies.
Right.
And I wonder, given the time frame, if James Gunn hadn't been taken off the movies and they were going to do a third one that would have been the same sort of thing, whether this would have happened. I feel like the timing is just right that, like, okay, he's off the movies. They have to change the movie, so let's go in a different direction with the book, and I feel like this is what they got.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe.
That's total speculation, but it seems really weird to go so far away from what is, you know, generally a successful property.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say how close are they hue to it. They don't always hold close to it, but, mm-hmm. You know, you're right. I mean, that's one of the more popular franchises in the movies, so
yeah,
it is curious.
I mean, Rocket Raccoon and Groot on their own are, you know, they've got to be just like money printing ideas, and Rocket is in here, and the only explanation you get is we don't talk about Rocket. which, again, fine by me. That means there's a mystery to get to. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's already been told. I'm sure someone will tell us on Twitter or the website what it is we missed because we didn't read that. Whatever.
Well, clearly we missed something.
Yeah.
But then again, maybe it happened in between.
Yeah,
serious.
I'm fine with that. You guys all have to listen to the Booksplode because these things are going to come up when we do it. I'm just saying.
Oh yes.
At the end of the month, I think that's going to do it for Guardians of the Galaxy, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, life is too short for bad Wi-Fi, Connor. It's just too short.
Oh, absolutely.
Ugh. It's awful. And that's why we have Eero. Eero is sponsoring the show today. They started Eero to build a Wi-Fi that you wish you had in your own home. It's a fast, reliable connection in every room. Backyard, too, if you set it up just right. In February 2016, the Eero home Wi-Fi system was introduced, bringing the idea of multiple access points placed throughout the house to consumers for the first time. Now there's the second generation Eero system. The new Eero and Eero Beacon allow a customer to build a Wi-Fi system that is more perfectly tailored to your home than ever before. They offer speed and range in the same quality, high-quality, elegant design that people have come to expect. The second generation has the addition of a third 5 gigahertz radio. I know enough to know that that's good. Second generation Eero is now a tri-band and twice as fast as the first generation, which lets users do more with it simultaneously in every room of the house. So you don't have to say, hey, I'm recording a podcast, shut Netflix off, because I've had that conversation. saying, and I don't have that conversation anymore. It seamlessly blankets your home in fast, reliable Wi-Fi, increased speed and range with the powerful tri-band radios. Sits flat on the surface, plugs into a power adapter. It connects over Ethernet or wirelessly in any combination that you'd like. Hero Plus is designed to provide simple, reliable security that defends all your home devices against a growing number of threats such as malware, spyware, phishing attacks, unsuitable content, if that's what you want to stop. The combination of Eero with Eero Plus provides complete protection for your network, all the devices, and those who use them as they connect to the internet. That's total network protection. It offers the ability to block malicious and unwanted content, advanced security, checking the sites that you visit against database of millions of known threats. Eero Plus prevents you from accidentally visiting malicious sites without slowing anything down. Eero Plus automatically tags sites that contain violent, illegal, or adult content, so you can choose what your kids can and cannot visit right there in the Eero app. The Eero app is great, by the way. Ad blocking, you get rid of annoying ads and pop-ups on all your device. It improves load times for ad-heavy sites, so you can browse and stream faster than you were before. There are third-party security apps. There's VPN protection from Encrypt.me. Password management from 1Password. That's the number one, and then password. And antivirus software from Malwarebytes. The single router model that you've all come up with, you used to. I still remember getting my first one, and I thought, oh my goodness, I don't have to be connected by a wire. And I thought it was so far out of the curve. But that doesn't work anymore. It's over. Everything is more high bandwidth now. If you look at the size of the photos that your phone takes, it's 10 times what they were forever ago. It's simple physics. Like light waves, Wi-Fi waves do not go through walls well. Imagine asking a light bulb in your living room to light up your master bedroom, unless you have one of those big open plan houses. But that would be horrible. What you need is a distributed system. This is what offices have had for years at considerable work and expense. There's a really expensive way to do it. But with Eero, you can install this enterprise-grade Wi-Fi system in your home in just a few minutes. Just download the Eero app on your iOS and Android devices, and it'll walk you through each step of the process. Quick, easy, and painless. I have done it. That's true. Current Wi-Fi routers are really tough to manage and optimize, so Eero's app lets you manage the network from the palm of your hand. You'll know how many devices are connected at any given point, as well as the internet speed that you're getting right there from your service provider. Always a bandwidth tester on there, which is rad. Eero is protected with state-of-the-art WPA2 encryption. It controls the hardware and the software for your entire network. It ensures that you're always secure. Traditional routers don't push software updates to their customers, so you're left vulnerable to cyber attacks. That's like that thing where you go on your I was going to say the name of the other company, but I won't. You remember to sign into the sort of admin for your router, and it's like, oh, you've got a firmware update. It's a year and a half old. It's like, oh, right. I guess I should have done that. So Eero is doing that automatically. It's really seamless and painless. And then finally, it's a great customer support system. If you call, you will get a hold of a Wi-Fi expert within 30 seconds. If you have any worries about other connected devices during setups, one of the experts at Eero will walk you through everything. The experts can also help you. If you're not sure how many Eeros are right for your home, just call and you can figure out what the best package is. And so I've had one now for quite a few months. I have no complaints. It's faster than my old router was. I have two beacons in the home unit. It covers my whole house a lot better, so I don't really have any dead spots or anything like that. And I can look up stuff while I'm waiting for my dog to go in the backyard, which is helpful, I think. So if you want to check this out, go to Eero.com/ifanboy. And the promo code is ifanboy. And never think about Wi-Fi again. If you do that, you will get $100 off the Eero base unit and two beacons package and 1 year of Eero Plus. Visit Eero.com/ifanboy. And of course, at checkout, enter ifanboy. Thank you, Eero.
So Batman 63, Tom King, Michael Janin, Jordi Belair, and so we finally get some answers as to what these one-shot dream sequences mean. And do you still hate them?
I don't like them. I get it. I'm not going to say it's bad, but I still, it's just not my favorite. You know that. I've been for years. It's just not a thing I love. It was more clear. It was less. You know, I like John Constantine, sort of, but it wasn't really him. It was just a dream version of it. So, you know, it's fine.
Although what was interesting was, you know, if it's all in Bruce's head because he's being tortured with the fear gas, there was one sequence where we followed Constantine by himself, which you'd think wouldn't happen if it was a dream sequence. But
so is the idea that we're saying that none of this Catwoman stuff happened?
Right. This is all in his head.
None of it. So not even just the part at the end or I mean, I know that the scenes in this didn't really happen. Or
maybe none of this happened.
I don't like that.
Just another dream becoming another nightmare.
Mm-hmm. I don't like that just as a rule. Like I just
Sure. I get it. I did like the scenes, some of the scenes, though.
Yes. Yeah. No, I mean, like, I have no problem with the craft of it.
But
Constantine's a little young and handsome, but I guess that's the DC version. Yeah. It was fine. you like it more than I do.
I don't dislike dream sequences, but it's when you do three issues in a row and they're all different. It's like, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
You know, the first one did zero for me. The second one we talked about last time, the Professor Pig one, was fun to look at. Ms. Garrett did great on it. This one, I liked the bantery scenes with him and Selena. I liked the discussion about the clock. That was a fun scene. But ultimately, it's hard to grab onto when every issue it's going to be different. I don't know if it's going to keep going or not. This is part three. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
That was fun. But Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man number two is sort of the quiet second Spider-Man book that they've launched. And I wanted to mention it because Tom Taylor is the writer and he's very good. And every time I read something by him, I always like it. I feel like he needs to be on a bigger book. I wonder if this is the big book they're putting him on. It's just certainly not going to do much because it's overshadowed by Amazing Spider-Man. But over the break, he wrote a Batman Annual issue that was like one of the best single issues I read all year. He's a really good writer, and this book is fun. And the art by Juan Cabal is great. And the coloring, especially from Nolan Woodward, I just love the way the Spider-Man suit looks in this book. And it's just it's another Spider-Man book. He's got a neighbor in trouble. It turns into a bigger deal. He calls for help from Johnny Storm, and it's got involves aliens, and it's just funny, and it's fun, and I like it.
It looks like in the style and coloring, which I like. I agree with you. It looks like one of their sort of sideways all ages books that isn't really part of the Marvel line, and the title seems to suggest that too. So that probably tends to pull mainstream attention away from it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even know what it was when it launched. I was like, oh, I'll check that out. And I kind of thought maybe it was a YA book. But
you know what? You know this Juan Cabal fella? Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with this work at all?
I the name is familiar. I can't think of why.
A little quietly going on in this.
Hmm.
Check out like the last page, the last couple, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's something there. There's a punch before that also looks like on the second and last page. Anyway, it's interesting. So it's good.
I like it.
Say it's good.
It's fine. Right, yeah, cool. Tom Taylor's. I don't read everything he does because for a while he was doing a lot of the, I think the video game tie-in books are.
Yeah, yeah. He did the.
I think he also did the
Injustice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I wasn't reading those, but every time I have read books from him, I've really liked them.
So the problem with Hulk books for me is that even if I like them for a little while, eventually they turn into something I don't like.
Yes.
We are getting there with Immortal Hulk, number, I think it's 12. I didn't write the number.
12, it's 12.
Yeah.
It's happening quick.
Yeah, the last issue I did not like is very, like, we seem to be walking around with a version of Hulk in, is it like in a dream world?
They're in hell.
Oh, that's it. And, like, the version of Hulk is, I don't mind that there are different versions of Hulk. I don't want it explained to me. I don't like that. I don't need that. Almost all of the points that I brought up against any books today are really matters of personal preference, of like what I want out of a thing. But what the book was and what I liked about it is now gone. Because now they were in the, but here's why that's happening. And sometimes I think if you're going to do episodic stories, you know, Hulk traveling from town, just do that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to explain it. Let it be what it is. But now we have to say the grand design and the thing behind it and whatever and all this. Like, I like when we skirt the surface of psychological explanations of this, but really delving into it deeply can go wrong quickly.
Yeah, and I don't know if they're implying here that basically his father created the Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's what they're saying. They may be saying it. They may not be saying it. I can't tell for sure. But
yeah,
I don't like that. And we've talked many times over the years about how the tendency in the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, maybe 10 years, has been to make every hero part of a grand design in some way, as opposed to just a random act of heroism. His random act of heroism to save Rick Jones from the explosion in my mind, that's what created the Hulk. It was a confluence of the gamma rays and the explosion and his demons.
His hubris.
It was a random act. The random act of heroism did it. Not his father was a gamma scientist and, you know,
that
makes it less interesting.
I think that the trend that we're seeing now that I can sort of look back on it is you've got a lot of creators who want to put a permanent mark on a character or in that universe. And the way that they found to be most effective at doing that is by plugging something into the history of it as opposed to creating something new in an ongoing sense. Because it's easier once you do something like that, then it's in canon, then it's on the Wikipedia page, then it, you know, like whatever.
Right.
Instead of like, I mean, like, I guess that, well, Dark Knight Returns would have been the opposite of that. It was like jump forward in the future and create something that hadn't existed before. But Year One was also what I'm talking about. It just so happened that Year One was really, really, really good. So it gets a pass. But that thing where
it wasn't part of a trend.
No. But it does seem to be the accepted thing. And it's funny because I don't think, I don't know, maybe it creates a lot of buzz. Like that's sort of why it works. So maybe it sells books or something like that. But it's so common now. And it's just convoluting stories that didn't need to be. And just over-explaining everything.
Yeah, I'm on the edge with this one. I'll
probably read the next one, but three in a row. I want out of the dreamscape hell, wherever they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like this Hulk. Basically, ever since they captured him and put him in the jars, it's been going in another way.
Yes. Not the good way.
No, but it was fun. You know, it had been really fun before.
I think reading the 500-page 80s Avengers West Coast omnibus is affecting our view of modern comics, Josh.
Oh, it absolutely is. Now, I don't want comics to go back to what they used to be, but you can definitely see what the strengths of those things were as opposed to what we're getting now. I feel like everybody needs to go read those. Like, everybody who's making comics should, like, get a crash course in each of the eras to see what worked and didn't work from out of there.
This is a preview of our Books Blog coming to you next week.
Well, we're working out in front of you. That's what's happening. We want everything left to say when we record it. It's funny because when you're doing a book, when you're reading a big book like that, like you have all these thoughts and I want to apply them to what we're talking about, but it has no context for anybody yet.
Right.
Wanted to quickly bring up the Wildstorm number 19. I believe there's 24 issues of this.
Yes, there are.
It really feels like I'm still
going on for 10 years.
No, it has not been late. It has not been slow. It's been coming out regularly, monthly.
It's been 19 months?
Something like that. I'm like, I don't feel like it. I feel like it comes out really regularly.
It's like a year and a half.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know when it first started coming out, but it definitely doesn't feel like, oh, right, I forgot about this book. It comes out regularly. But it still feels like it's weird because they're re-explaining the Wildstorm universe. So they're taking a lot of elements from it before that always still feel kind of new to me. It really was creating a new comic book universe, which is really fun.
Well, they're not re-explaining it. They're sort of
reinventing it. I mean,
reinventing it. Yeah, it's a new version of it.
What's interesting is that Warren Ellis created a lot of this.
Yeah.
And so he's basically like, okay, here's what I did. I'm going to do it again in a different way, which is so strange to see him reinvent Jenny Sparks and the Authority and the Doctor and whatever. And it's related to what he'd done before, but it is different. It's just like he had the germ of an idea, and this is what it would look like if I turned it this way and went this way. You know, we talked about a couple of weeks ago, we talked about different artists writing the same scripts or drawing the same scripts.
Yep.
This is like the same writer drawing this, writing
weird.
The same concept as if he was a different writer.
It's weird.
It's definitely weird. It's really enjoyable. I really enjoy it. But I feel like it's just coalescing now into something that I understand what it is. And like now they've got all the pieces set to move ahead with it. And I was like, we're 19 issues in out of 24. It's weird pacing.
It lost me a long time ago.
No, I know that. I have a Wildstorm
thing. I'm just saying because it was so strangely paced. I was like,
There was this middle period of Wildstorm that were some of the best books of that era.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not necessarily. Sure. There was obviously something really good in the first bit. I didn't read that. I wasn't around for it. And the books, the style of those books at the time would make them difficult. But immediately they brought in Alan Moore to write a bunch of it. And, you know, Warren Ellis made his bones in the Wildstorm universe. And Joe Casey's amazing Wildcats runs. And there's really great material in there.
Yep.
And it's not tied down with all the Marvel DC kind of continuity. So... they were inventive and sort of new, if not of the time a little bit. But it's been fun for me. I want to say I can't wait for it to end. I wish it would keep going though.
Let's move into War Corner. It's the corner, War Corner. Of the room we haven't been in a while.
No.
Probably because we forgot to brand it a couple times. And talk about War is Hell number one, which is one of the 80 years of Marvel specials they're doing to pay tribute to the old War comics they used to publish.
What a great title.
And this was a nice surprise. Featured two stories, the first written and drawn by Howard Chaykin, the second written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, drawn by Alberto Albuquerque. And this was terrific.
At first I was like, I saw the cover and I was like, New Garth Ennis war book? Because I think he did the last War is Hell issues that were produced. Beautiful Dan Panosian cover as well. Yeah, but Chaykin in here. And before we get too far into this, can we take a minute to recognize how prolific Howard Chaykin is?
He is. You'd think he'd be slowing down, but he's constantly putting books out.
Not even like putting his name on stuff. He's writing and drawing complex shit. It's amazing. I mean,
at the age of 68, I mean, that's not.
Is that how old he is?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I mean, I'm tired. I'm old. Younger than him.
His books wear me out, but like he's got it. So what did you think of the story?
Oh, I loved it. The first story, Swing Verboten, which is about a Luftwaffe pilot who is also a jazz and swing band fan, which is sort of illegal under the Nazis, who accidentally kills Glenn Miller.
Really swinging for the mainstream fences there.
Right. I mean, if people don't know, Glenn Miller was the biggest musical star of the era, one of the biggest in 1944. He was a big band leader.
Yep.
And he went over to Europe for the war to entertain the troops, and his plane disappeared over the English Channel. And they don't know what happened to it. They never found it. And that's what happens here, basically. An analog character whose name is something but not Glenn Miller is desperate to get to the front to entertain the troops. And while we're also following along this German pilot, and then like at the very end, as they're about to, you know, the German pilots are about to leave their patrol, they see the lone ship flying through the fog of the English Channel, and they get shot down. And then the guy gets captured, the German guy, and he's like, I'm excited. At least I'll get to hear this guy play. And he's like, oh, no, his plane disappeared. It was like the end of a Twilight Zone episode. Brad Mitchell.
Yeah.
That's the character. I love this. I love the first story.
I did, too. A lot.
Everything about it. And then War Devil, which was the second story, which is set in Afghanistan. I didn't love it as much, but I did really like it by the end.
I don't remember a thing about it. Like I read it.
Basically, I mean, it was the narration, sort of heavy-handed, but about how there's sort of the war devil that gets inside of you when you spend too much time in war, and it's sort of it could be a real thing because their eyes all turn a certain color when the people and the characters in the story have it, or it could just be a metaphor. But you know, it's just the horribleness of constant war.
They both are old-timey kinds of war comics stories, mm-hmm. like the. Both of those things feels like they could have been out of the 60s just as well as now.
You know what else? This is some really fucking good Chaykin.
It really is.
It's really good Chaykin. This might be some of the best Chaykin I've seen in a long time.
It doesn't
hurt. Because every once in a while you get like a weird Chaykin hand or like a strange – or characters don't all look the same. But
well, you remember in Saving Private Ryan, Tom Hanks had a Chaykin hand.
That's true. He did have a Chaykin hand.
You know what? I don't mind that this was lettered more traditionally than most Chaykin stuff is.
No, in fact, that's a plus.
Yes.
And really detailed work, great planes. There's no skimping here. There are detailed backgrounds, there are vistas, there are ships in the water, there are crowd scenes, there are planes. I mean, you're right. And also, telling a short story is not easy.
No.
And it's a skill that a lot of comics people don't really get to practice, and this was a really good one.
Yep,
a really good one.
It was a delightful surprise.
Wonder what Chaykin's working on right this moment. Probably 10 books.
Yeah, and they're all written and drawn, and people hate half of them.
That's fine. That's what good art should do.
It's true.
Talk about the patron pick.
Okay.
Let's say so patreon.com/ifanboy. That's where you can go join up to support the show, and one of the benefits you get being a patron. Besides making fun of us in the Facebook group, is you get to vote to add a book to the rundown. And this week, for a while, it looked like it might be a race between this book and Naomi, but Buffy the Vampire Slayer, number one, pulled away pretty decisively. Story by Jordi Belair, art by Dan Mora. This book is published by Boom Studios after a long stint with the Buffy license at Dark Horse. Now it's at Boom. And it was just a nice surprise. I didn't know anything about it because I watched the show for like 3 or 4 seasons and I loved it. And then all of a sudden I just got sick of it and stopped watching it. Like it was like a light switch.
I've done that with shows. Had enough.
I watched Angel. I watched all of Angel. So I like that world. And long-time listeners will remember that Ron and I both read the Dark Horse Buffy season 8 book. I think it was season 8. For like a year or 2 years.
I remember that, yeah.
3 years. We read it for a long time and then got sick of that too and stopped reading it. So now when Buffy books come out, I don't really pay attention. So I was surprised to see Jordi Belair writing it. And I was happy to see Dan Mora, who we really liked on the Klaus books, on art.
Okay.
And this is interesting because, and I'm just waiting to tee you up for a second. This is interesting because, kind of like, and I don't know if you may not have known this reading, it's kind of like the Wildstorm. This is just a total reinterpretation of the story. This isn't a continuation. This isn't like the Dark Horse books, which were a literal continuation of the story. This is a total reinvention. And I say that in that it's basically the same, but it starts at the beginning. Buffy's new in town. She meets Willow and Xander. Giles is helping her as her watcher in the school. And we've started at the beginning again. It's called Welcome Back to the Hellmouth. This is the title of the story. So they're basically starting from scratch again and not telling the same stories that the show told, but with the same characters and the same set and the same setup. And I know that Josh really hated this book.
I didn't hate it. I didn't care about it.
Right.
I don't think I knew that it was that kind of retelling.
Right. You wouldn't know unless you watched the show.
I know enough about the show, and I don't know if I ever even tried to watch the show. I think I might have a little bit, but like...
It's not for you. It's not
it is not. It's like I watched like 10 minutes of it and went, oh, no.
It's like
no,
the polar
no.
opposite of your type of show.
Yeah, and... But it felt like I was like, are they just retelling this? But it also felt like I needed to have seen the other one to appreciate what was happening in this.
That was kind of the weird...
It felt in-jokey. Jokey's not the word, but it felt like it was done for Buffy fans.
Oh, for sure. There was a lot of in-jokes. I mean,
yeah.
Willow keeps asking about witches, and in the show she ends up becoming a witch. And the character Anya, the blonde woman, I was not watching when she showed up, but she's a character from the show. So, like, there's a lot of that kind of thing where... It probably doesn't make a lot of sense, but
if it's a new, it's supposed to tell the story from the beginning. That wasn't clear to me at all. Like I didn't know. It didn't feel like it was set up like a jumping on point, I guess. And I know just earlier I was saying I like it when superhero books do that, but I like it when superhero books do that. I don't like it when other books do that.
I mean, I can imagine people reading this for the first time and being able to follow it. I'm sure. And I don't know if that's the baggage that we would bring
culturally
along with it.
Yeah, it's absolutely possible.
I really liked the Dan Mora art.
I did too.
I think he's terrific. We talked about him before. But I liked that he drew the characters. Mm-hmm. And this is George Jonty, I believe is his name, who did the Buffy book for Dark Horse, did this as well. It's like the opposite of what they do with the Star Wars books. Where
yes.
Clearly, they're not photo referencing pause scenes on DVDs. The characters look like the actors, but they're not slaved to the actors.
This is how these licensed books with real actors need to be done, as far as I'm concerned. It's when Eminem was on Star Wars for a little while, and certain artists that have popped in there, and then on the Vader books where you had, had a lot of really good artists on that, and, compared to the photo-y still images, it's so much better. Like, they're drawing a likeness. They're not copying a photo, and that's what cartooning is to me. And
really
I find it so much
like this can do it where you there is no point where you look at Buffy or Xander or Willow or Giles and you don't know who you're looking at. But it also doesn't look like they just paused the DVD or traced the screen. It just doesn't look like that, or dropped a photo into Photoshop. It just doesn't. It worked really well for me. The art, I liked it a lot. Now, the story was, a little tough. I got real sick of Xander real fast. I think by like page 5.
Cutesy. It was all that cutesy
It's and that was part of the problem why I fell off of Buffy the show, because I got really sick of the cutesiness. It's tough because I remember being really sick of Xander in the show after a while too. Like, it's like he's not able to talk in a normal sentence. Mm-hmm. It's all like this cutesy, almost Josh Whedon-esque dialogue, and it was really grating after a while in this issue.
Well, because it's a person with an affectation. As an adult, you're like, can you please just get to the point? You're wasting my time and it's not funny. Like, you have to be really, really good at it to sell it, or it has to feel fresh. And if you've seen it a lot, then it doesn't feel as fresh. Overall,
the writing I thought was good. It was just some of the dialogue was just like,
But I feel like if you really like Buffy, you probably like this a lot. That's what I feel like. Mm-hmm. I feel like this would excite Buffy fanatics.
Right.
And it's got the right kind of art, you know, for this kind of project. But it was never going to be for me as a thing.
No. But...
And I think that's the right choice, by the way. I don't think that you're necessarily going to bring in a new audience of people with a licensed Buffy comic. You know?
No one's sitting around Boom Studios saying, how do we make Buffy bring in the jaded 41-year-old comic reader?
42 in a month.
No, but not yet, though. I'm not jumping your gun on you.
I know.
That's not the strategy for Buffy.
That's the correct move, by the way.
Right. And so, are you sticking with it?
No.
I might read the second one, just to see. But
I know that Jordy is like a Buffy super fan.
Right.
So, you know, good for her. She's probably having the time of her life. I saw there was like a little Firefly reference on a TV, and I was like, all right, I don't have much patience for that stuff anymore. No, and it's really
fine. I mean, that's fine. I don't mind us still, but like I saw somewhere it was like, a Whedonverse crossover in the new Buffy issue. And I was like, oh God, what are they doing here? And I was like, oh, she was watching the fucking TV show. It's not a crossover.
It's a nod.
So let's do ratings.
Ratings.
Ratings out of 5. I'm going to give Buffy the Vampire Slayer number 1 a 3.
I'm going to go with a neutral 2.5.
Okay.
I don't think it was bad. I think there were a lot of things that were good about it, but I'm going to have to leave that up to other people to decide.
Again, not for Josh.
Not for me.
So there you go. If you want to add a book to the rundown, patreon.com/ifanboys, where you can do it. And it's also where you can help us keep the show going, keep the lights on, and help us reach our next stretch goal, which is it's a two-part stretch goal. Number one is we upload all of the missing video shows and minis to our YouTube channel and re-embed them on the website. A bunch of them were taken down by our old distributor, probably half of them. And you could watch them all again if you want. We hit our next stretch goal. But the other part of the stretch goal is the non-comics media podcast we'll do once a month. And Josh, I'm a bum. We're not doing this because I would love to talk to you about the Peter Jackson documentary, which you just watched.
I did. They Shall Not Grow Old.
Which I watched last month, and I would love to have done a show on that, but we didn't reach that stretch goal, so no show about that.
Well, maybe we'll get a chance to talk about it on next year's All Media podcast when neither of us will remember it.
No, because it came out, technically speaking, in December, so I'm not eligible for that show. But, maybe if we hit our stretch goal, we'll do a roundup of some many things. You can also help support the show at ifanboy.threadless.com, where you can find our t-shirts, our t-shirt designs, iFanboy logo, her and Pick a League podcast, ratings, if we're like show GDAT. And Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters. Those are all our shirts, and you can get those designs and other objects and products as well. fanboy.com/support. That's where you can help us out via PayPal directly if you want to do that. And fanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can find links to all the books we talk about in our Booksplode shows, as well as a general Amazon link. We thank everyone who helps support the show and keep it going, and we do appreciate that very much.
Every week, we like to thank a few of the people who've supported us over at patreon.com/ifanboy by giving them superpowers that we make up and confer upon them.
Mm-hmm.
So, Connor, what do we have for Scott Lyles?
Scott Lyles can eject thumbtacks from his thumbs.
Oh, it's a twist on the idea of thumbtack.
Mm-hmm.
So does he work in an office situation?
I mean, yes, he has a big cork board.
Like, it wouldn't be very useful if, for example, he worked in a tire shop.
No.
It would be detrimental in that instance.
Yes, but now, you know, he never needs to worry about it. He just sort of, if he's got to post it into his cork board, just thumbs it in there.
Nice. He's got pretty good control over it, because that could be problematic.
Yeah, it's not like he shoots it out at an unknown velocity.
Or like, you know, you don't want to be scratching yourself in the middle of the night and, you know, put a tack in your balls.
Don't make me laugh. Don't do that, Scott.
I broke my promise just then and I coughed
but
in
I mean,
your ears.
The thing is, even with the control, you know, sometimes you're tired and you do accidentally thumbtack your balls.
I mean, or your eyes. Like, there's a lot that can go wrong there.
Right, sure. It's dangerous.
Well, J.D. Anthony has the ability to turn into a real old-timey gangster for various for short moments if he needs to get things accomplished. So, like, say that he's going to the cable place and he needs a new box or whatever, and it's not working out, then he will transform into an old-timey gangster, make the sort of threats and things that he needs to get things done, and then he reverts back to his normal self.
I need this cable box, see?
Yeah, no. You know, be awful shame if I don't get this, see what happens. He doesn't remember what happened. All he knows is that things have gotten done for him.
Mm-hmm.
But he literally transforms into another person so they can't tie it back to him.
Mm,
it's like a non-existent gangster.
So it's not just he takes the persona, he becomes like a different person.
Yep. Like with an Edward G. Robinson suit.
Interesting.
Yeah. Uses old-timey tactics to get what he wants.
Does he have a Tommy gun?
I mean, he could. I didn't say old Tommy tactics, but it was close.
Okay.
I mean, it could be. You could, I haven't really decided on what gangster I want it to be. I don't know if it's Tommy from Goodfellas, or you know, more of a Sill from Sopranos kind of thing, or Barzini.
Damn.
It was Barzini all along.
Right. Obviously, Daniel Warden has toes that are as long as his fingers, and they are as dexterous.
So he's an ape.
Yeah, but are they exactly as long as their hands?
I don't know. I don't know.
They have dexterous feet, obviously, but his toes are as long as his fingers.
It's a shoe buying challenge.
He's got to buy big shoes, but he can grip things real easily with his toes.
But if he wears sandals, people scream and run.
Oh yeah, no, there's no sandal wearing.
There shouldn't be anyway.
He's the guy at the beach, like full on basketball shoes.
He's got those huge Shaq size shoes, but he's 5'10".
Exactly. He and Shaq have to shop together because that's the only kind of shoes he can buy.
Right, that makes sense. Jose Ayerve has various pull down flaps on his body that feature charging ports.
For all kinds of devices?
I mean, mostly USB. And he can update his firmware to sort of go from USB-C to a USB 3 or something like that so that he's, you know, he's getting the proper voltage and stuff like that. But, yeah, he just, you know.
What about – what happens when they change the protocols?
He gets firmware update. He can do that. It's not painless, but he could do that. There's a couple of wireless key charging pads on him as well, but it is difficult to sort of sit still that long. So it's a little easier to just sort of run a cable.
Does it have any voltage problems between like 120 or 240 or other European voltages?
No, it's sort of like, you know, like one of those like the Apple power plugs sort of adjust for whatever it is that it's going in there. He's got the transformer installed.
And he never runs out of juice himself.
No, he's fine. I mean, he might get hungry. But, you know, it's helpful.
Hungry,
it's helpful
or tired.
On long plane rides. It makes for some awkward social situations. I'm not going to lie.
Where are these flaps?
Chest, back, calves, forearms. You know, like the old toys where you just pull down the sort of rubbery flap?
Yeah, for sure.
And there would be a thing behind there. Yeah, charge ports.
All right. Well, thanks, Scott, JD, Daniel, and Jose for being patrons. You can go to patreon.com/ifan, where you get the $5 higher level and you get a dumb superpower. That's how it works.
Let's just do the second one real quick because we're running long.
Elijah from Detroit, Michigan. I wanted to know if you could each pick your all-time favorite writer to collaborate with your all-time favorite artist for a project. Who would you choose and why? Jeez, I wish I had more time to think about this one.
I mean, my first instinct was like Garth Ennis already worked with Steve Dillon.
Right.
But Steve Dillon's not my all-time favorite artist. He's my all-time favorite artist to work with Garth Ennis. And that made it a little more challenging. So it made me think like would I have wanted to see Garth Ennis write a let's say a war story with art by Darwin Cook? And then I started thinking about like, does that work? And I'm not sure that it does.
Who knows?
I don't know. I think that one of the things that's interesting is that sort of that writer artist magic.
Yeah, there's a chemistry and a collaborative style that not everyone works with everyone else.
Yeah, but I don't know that that's necessarily attributable to like the style of writing, the style of art, rather than the personalities of the people that are going together. Like, I wouldn't have necessarily looked at Sean Phillips and go, that art needs to be written by that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a magic they have. There's an alchemy they have. Like, if you were to show me on paper, I think, of course on paper, but if, you know, sight unseen, I see Steve Dillon's art and I don't know that it's necessarily going to speak to me at first. It's only within the context of the words that were given to it. Which, by the way, is the magic of being an editor, to be like, well, this might work.
Yeah, sure.
That
might be the most important thing editors do, is pair the people together.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
but
who would you – okay, this is a tough one.
The hard question is figuring out who your all-time favorite writer and all-time favorite artist is. Well, the kind of changes.
Yeah, it does. And I think that actually they're a little antithetical to one another, because, you know, if you're just choosing your all-time favorite writer or all-time favorite artist, and by the way, good luck choosing that.
Right, exactly.
You know, you're just putting together a team automatically. There's no
– like – that. Well, that's a good question. So sort of like, do you know who your all-time favorite writer and all-time favorite artists are? Just like, if you had to pick one of each, do you know that or something?
All-time is hard because I have changed over the years. I definitely have – this is my favorite current right now kind of guy. It's probably Garth Ennis, but you could make an argument for Alan Moore.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's others. Also, I'm talking comic book writers.
Yeah, sure.
I don't want Neal Stephenson to do comics. Or Shakespeare, I don't know.
Actually, I do think Neal Stephenson could do comics.
Yeah, I do too, but I think it would – to me, his strength is his way with language and his wordiness, and you'd have to pare that way down. And what I love about him is that he can go off on a verbal tangent in a way that comic book writers shouldn't usually. Mm. Yeah, I mean, and Alan Moore is weird because he hasn't really done anything.
I know there's a lot of baggage within that, but I don't think anyone should shy away from...
No, it's not it. It's that I don't feel like I've read anything new that I've liked from him in a really long time, so...
But it's all time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We never got around doing this in the video show. I think we talked about at one point sort of figuring out the rankings, but we never did it. But, like, I don't know. It's a hard question.
I mean,
Alan Moore would certainly be in the conversation. So would Frank Miller and Garth Ennis. And,
you know, what writer would I pair with Jack Kirby? Because we're talking, right. Like, I don't know. That's hard. Because I don't even think, like there's nobody alive who can work with that anymore. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't. Yeah, and I find it really hard to narrow down like one favorite. I can tell you, you know, like my favorite comic book, I can do that, is Preacher. My favorite superhero comic book is A New Frontier.
Right.
So that's how I came up with Garth Ennis and Darwin Cook. And I bet they would have similar sensibilities.
I bet it would be interesting.
I bet it would. They're both not Americans, but they both are very steeped and knowledgeable about American culture. They both have an appreciation for history and different times and hard men.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm going with that.
I think that would work, actually.
I'm going with my first instincts then.
That's good. That's a good choice.
Do you have any additions for that, or you want to think
about it? No, I mean, I don't know. It's a hard...
What's your... Like, I say to you, who's your favorite writer? You don't think about it too long. What's your instinct?
Of all time?
Mm-hmm. You got to pick one. I mean, it's J. Michael Straczynski, right?
Sure. It's either
Daniel
it's
Way.
It's either Alan Moore or Frank Miller, I think.
Okay. I can work with that's enough for me. Who's your favorite all-time artist?
See, that's a harder question.
It is a harder question, isn't it?
Because there's different styles, there's different things you want out of different artists, different stories.
That's like, who's your favorite musician? You're like punk, rock, jazz, hip, what?
I mean, Norm Brayfogle is my favorite all-time Batman artist, but I wouldn't call him my all-time favorite artist.
Sure.
You know, you talk about Darwin Cook, you talk about Frank Whiteley. You know, George Perez in his prime, Byrne in his prime.
Ugh.
And I, you know what, I actually was thinking about this, again, we're going to go back to West Coast Avengers. A lot of, again, you know what, there's a case to be made that it's John Byrne for me, because...
I can see that.
When I close my eyes for a lot of characters, I see the John Byrne version, because he was doing a lot of that work in the 80s and early 90s when I was you know, a kid getting into comics.
So, and like, that work stood out.
Yes.
He was one of the first, like, McFarlane stood out at that time because he was way different than everybody. But John Byrne stood out because I was like, this looks great.
Yeah, and I mean, he did sort of the seminal versions of mm-hmm. a lot of characters. He did the best version of the Uncanny X-Men. He rebooted Superman in the best
Fantastic
way.
Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four and the Avengers. And, yeah. He drew events like Legends. So, like, he did all – I mean, so it's – there's a case to be made that for me – it could be John Byrne.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we'll say it could be.
This was a fun conversation.
But
Thank
I wouldn't
you,
pair John Byrne with Frank Miller or Alan Moore.
No, that wouldn't work.
That's the thing.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, and I think that's what I was running up against, but I had to really – I mean, I can't think I like guys who tend to do the same kinds of things. So maybe. So that was it. Thank you. If you want to write in, you can write to contact@ifanboy.com. We are very much in search of good questions and conversations. That was a really short and simple question that led to a really interesting conversation. Coming your way, actually recently having come your way, was the Talksplode with Brian Edward Hill. Hour and a half, I think, more or less. I had a nice long conversation with Brian, who has a pretty varied career. I didn't know a thing about him when I started, which is different than a lot of the shows that I do. So we got to chat and sort of get to know where we were for a little bit, and I liked it. And then we've been teasing something a little bit on this show, haven't we?
Yeah. So next week, this coming week, Thursday or so, you'll get our next Booksplode, the Avengers West Coast Epic Collection. How the West Was Won is the book we're talking about. It's 497 pages. I've been reading it for my entire life. And,
you know,
we're very excited to talk about it. We've been talking offline about how excited we were going to talk.
Yeah.
About.
Here's my teaser about this. And this is what I think I've seen as we have been going back and reading these older comics. I don't want to say seminal, cause I don't know that that's right, but comics from other eras, and it takes over your thinking in a way that none of the current books I'm reading are. It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. When I read the Superman book, I was like, right, this it gives you context for everything now. And it's fascinating. It really is. And to be, you know, and to be you and I, who spent all of this time talking about new books that come out every week, to sort of go backwards and do that in a way that we didn't even really do for the video show because we had to read so much content.
Yep.
We never read really big things like this because we wouldn't have done it in time. It really makes an impact. It's very fascinating.
Yeah, well, a lot to talk about. So you can look for that this coming week. And then in February, there'll be another Talksplode, right?
Yes, yeah, and I'm pretty sure I have it locked down, so I know who it is.
I think you should interview yourself, like you almost said earlier. That would be interesting talk about.
I mean, it's probably going to happen at some point.
It almost came down to it.
Yep. Well, I held fast, okay. Like a swarthy seaman to the rail during a storm. We got it done. Head over to ifanboy.com. That's where the rail is. You can find all of our podcasts. You can comment on those. You can make sure to check out. There's 82 Talksplodes. 82. Wow. Now, I know that I only do them every other month, but we've been at this for a while. Some of them are probably fairly outdated, but I think there's some fairly universal conversation and all that, and it's certainly enough to keep you occupied for a couple of cross-country trips. 82. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy or following @ifanboy on Twitter. You can follow us individually at J. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram and at Cisco Patrick on Instagram.
And if you like the show, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes or even just a star rating. It helps people find the show. It's the most popular podcast aggregator and place people find them. So any show you listen to, you'd really help them out by just leaving them a star rating or a quick review. It helps the shows immensely. Even better than that is to tell your friends, word of mouth, social media. People ask what podcast you're listening to. We do appreciate every time iFanboy is mentioned, and we do thank you. And so there you go. We're done.
That'll do. What do you listen to podcasts on?
iTunes.
Okay. I use Overcast. I don't remember why I stopped using iTunes. I just know that everybody told me iTunes was terrible, and I was like, it's fine. And then I started using something else. So
I use iTunes on my desktop when I'm working, and then like at the gym or in a car ride, I use the shitty app on the phone because I just plug it into the car, and I can listen that way.
I get you.
But I don't really – yeah, iTunes. It's easy. I just subscribed to the new David Tennant podcast, which is coming out soon.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's interviewing his famous friends.
It's a lot of that going around. Amy Mann and Ted Leo introduced a similar show. Not as famous. Better. Okay, so that'll do then, I guess. That's all. I'm Josh.
You're back.
I am, barely. I'll be better next week, hopefully. All right.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.